Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, before we start the show, I want to tell you about Dodge. See your authorized Dodge dealer and experience a world of performance, design, and fuel efficiency. Schedule a test drive. Go to Dodge.com and check out our powerful lineup. Hey guys, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the Motorator DeAndrea, and we've got Bill Goldberg, I think, calling in a few minutes. He's in the car on his way to film a TV show. I think he's doing NCIS Los Angeles. I don't know if I just gave that away or what. I don't know this plot or whatever, but it's Goldberg doing NCIS. So he's in the middle of filming. He's going to call in. But we do have Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com in the studio. And before we get started, I'm going to tell you that CarCast is brought to you by Zybar for better engine performance, horsepower, fuel economy, and lower underhood temperatures. Zybar is an ultra-thin, high-temperature coating that reduces radiant heat by 90%. Put Zybar on, take heat off. Learn more at Zycoat.com. It's Z-Y-C-O-A-T.com. Alistair, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, man, it's been a little while.
It has.
It's been a little while. We see you at events.
Yeah, I was out in Pebble Beach, which was great fun.
At Goodwood. I don't know if we've seen you since.
Goodwood, Pebble Beach.
Yeah,
the American Goodwood, isn't it, really?
Man, I've been watching all of the Instagram videos from Goodwood Revival. If you follow Goodwood Revival on Instagram or Goodwood Racing or something on Instagram, and it's all these little like 1 minute clips.
Yeah, it's fabulous,
and
isn't it?
They're all fantastic. Like, you've never seen people drive these cars this way. We saw a 250 GTO like hit a wall. Unfortunately, that's bad. But man, I saw a video of a guy driving a Jag, I guess like an E-Type. And the hood kept popping open. Now, the hood opens toward the driver, right? So it's just kind of a clamshell that opens.
Yeah.
And, like, I guess the straps on the side came loose or broke, and it was flopping in and out. And it was the view was from the driver. He had, like, a helmet cam or something in the car. And the hood kept opening a bit, and he couldn't see in front of him. And then it would close, and then he can kind of get – and he was dicing it up with, like, two other cars, and the hood opened for a second, and you can't see, and it closed, and he passed them both. I don't know if they were just afraid. They're like, that guy can't see. But some fantastic driving. A guy in the Cobras just sawing at the wheel, passing people, lapping people, and the commentators are like, I've never seen anything like that before. And he was just sliding in every turn, just going by. Man, this is crazy. Crazy video. So I don't know why that popped into my head. It's probably your accent.
Well, what I never get is that a lot of these cars are owned by, you know, squillionaires, and then they hire Formula One drivers or top sport cars to race them for them. The last person you want in your kind of GDO is a Formula One driver who, they can handle the car, but also they're going to turn the brain off and they're going to thrash the thing.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because we're doing this video series on Motor Trend. Sorry, buddy.
What's that?
It's called Adam Carolla Goes Racing. And yesterday, the second episode launched, and we went and we visit. It's at Goodwood, and we talked to the guy who drives Nick Mason's Ferrari 250 GTO. The driver's name is Nick as well. It was very confusing. We went over to the car, looked for Nick Mason. He's the drummer of Pink Floyd.
Yep.
He paid like $50,000 for this car in 1977, and now it's worth at least $50 million. It could be $80
million. He's the most unassuming rock star you've ever met, isn't he, Nick Mason?
He's raced Le Mans.
Yeah,
he's raced Le Mans. This car raced Le Mans. Anyway, he's a guy who he has somebody. I don't know if he pays him to drive it or the guy drives it for fun. But in the video, it's funny because Adam's like, are you afraid of the Flint wall? What do you do? And he goes, oh, I just take it easy at this hill climb event because it's, you know, it's just kind of a parade lap. But he goes, but at the Revival is when I really drive it. And I was like, ah.
Well, there's also some interesting stuff coming out of the Revival that now tire technology's got so much better. You've got these cars going around faster than they did back in the day because they've got, you know, contemporary tire compounds on. A lot of them have like little cheeky electric power steering systems fitted, and there's a fair little bit of a finessing, as we might say.
I'm sure there is. I'm sure all the suspension bushings are urethane now and anything to like tighten it up but keep it period correct. First of all, you have to keep up with the tire technology. Like if they're using a much grippier tire, the suspensions back then were somewhat designed around the tire, the limitations of the tire, and now if the tires are better, you kind of have to beef up that suspension a little bit, do something to it, right?
So yeah, the problem is you've got an old race circuit. A lot of the time, old drivers, old cars. I mean, I've been a good few times over the years, and it's a pretty hairy event because when the visor comes down, nobody holds back.
No, I'm telling you, the cars were hitting the dirt. Cars were all over the place. But
did you see the roll with the Lotus Cortina?
Oh, I did. Yeah.
Yeah, check that out on Instagram. I think we follow the same stuff.
I think we do follow the same stuff. All right, Chris is going to get Bill on the line. I want to get into some of the testing that you guys have been doing. Before we get into that, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Wrangler. Everybody has a favorite pair of jeans, a pair that fits perfectly and always looks great. The pair you wear out at night, at home, on the couch, at work, wherever, they're the go-to. Do not underestimate their performance. No one knows this better than Wrangler. Wrangler jeans are made for the modern-day adventurers, the go-getters, folks who like to keep moving. Whether you ride a bike, a bronc, a skateboard, or you're the type who walks the earth in searching of something, these are the jeans for you, like Kane and Kung Fu, just walk the earth looking for meaning. I don't know if he wore Wranglers or not, or just maybe under his robe. They have classic and modern styles, a range of fits at a price that works for you. They have vintage re-releases. Wrangler has something for everyone. So visit Wrangler.com and check out their great selection of jeans, shirts, pants, outerwear for men and women. Wrangler, made for the modern world.
All right, we got Bill on line one. Just press 01 on the top.
All right. Hello?
Oh, good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, man. How are you? We're here. We're started. We got Alistair in the studio with us. How are you, buddy?
I am fucking exhausted. I left my house at 4:50 this morning.
Jeez. We said at the top of the show that you were going to film a TV show. And I guess you're a couple days into it now?
Yeah, this is day four.
Well, there you go.
Are you commuting every single day, Bill?
I am.
He's filming in L.A., so that's
he's filming in L.A., but unfortunately his lovely wife, Wanda, has like a broken ankle. So he's going home every night and taking care of things.
That's sweet.
And then making his little commute in the...
It's an excuse for my claustrophobia is what it is.
Yeah, right? by the way, that's no joke. We were at Roadkill Nights and like an SUV picked us up to take us to the airport. And it was like raining out and Bill put the window down. Just crack the window a little bit. Just get a little air in there. I'm okay with that. And then the driver puts it down. Bill goes, he says, excuse me, sir, did you roll up the window? Yeah. I suggest you roll it back down before I punch it out. The guy's like,
I didn't
okay.
Say that, did I?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I did. Yeah,
it was early, and it was funny. And the guy's like, okay. I think he saw some humor in it as well. But I knew what you were talking about of why you do that. But anyway, so we're just about to get into some of this, some of the testing and stuff that we were talking about Goodwood, and we were talking about the Goodwood Revival that's going on right now, and all the little videos are popping up. But Alistair's been heading up some good testing recently, and I think where do you want to start? You want to start with the cars or the trucks?
Let's start with the trucks.
Let's start with the trucks. There's a head to head competition. A head to head to head competition.
Yeah.
What did you guys do?
So we had this only happens every once every about 7 years. We had a brand new Ram 1500. Ford F-150, Chevy Silverado. We actually put them head-to-head for about 3 days of filming. And then it's an 18-minute epic film. Check it out on our YouTube channel. Edmunds is the channel, unsurprisingly. And there was a very clear winner at the end of it all.
So explain some of the testing and how this works. This is a big deal. These trucks sell about a million units a year in the U.S. You know, when they make a big revision to these trucks, this is a $1 billion R&D budget. Like, this is not insignificant. This is the bread and butter. Ford, to the extent of saying that they're kind of phasing out most of their cars and focusing on their trucks and SUVs, because an F-150 is so profitable for them. You'd think that they were Porsche with all their profit.
But this is the one that you can't screw up, isn't it? You screw up the truck, you screw the company.
You can't screw it up. You know, this is a little
just for the record, is the budget as big as Alistair's?
I don't know. I don't know what his buying budget is, but it's not insignificant. That's for sure. So this is an important thing as well, because I want to get into some of the testing that you guys did. And then the long-term tests I have questions about, and you've said this before.
Sure.
You guys buy vehicles. You have a budget where you select vehicles and you keep them for a year or so. And everyone on your staff drives these things whenever they need to, because you guys try to get – is there like a minimum 15,000, 20,000 miles a year? You try to put a lot of miles on them.
Yeah, right? We try and do 20,000 miles a year, which is kind of, I suppose, more than most people would. But also we have – I mean, I have a team of about 40 people, so we have lots of different people, you know, rotating through it, different lifestyles, different driving techniques, that sort of thing. So it becomes a proper real-world test. And interesting, in this test, without wishing to spoil it for everybody, the Ram comes out number one, and we get all these YouTube comments. You know what it's like.
Yeah.
So you get these YouTube comments. It's sponsored by Ram. You know, it's sponsored by Dodge and all the rest of it. And actually, we went out and bought the Ram ourselves. So I signed off $62,000 for the Ram.
Let's go ahead and caveat that. Yes, we do have Dodge as a sponsorship, but that has no bearing on our content. We love the guys, but no bearing on our content and no bearing on your content.
Yeah, we're not sponsored by Ram.
Especially when it's here. Especially when it's here. So, I'm a little surprised as well. And unfortunately, you know, Fiat Chrysler had some ups and downs over the past few years. I think they're starting to make some pretty good cars. But the truth is, you know, in the past few years, if you Googled top 10 cars you should avoid, something Chrysler, Ram, Fiat, Maserati would pop up on that list. Now, this is something that's been changing for quite a bit. Now they're starting to make some more fun stuff. But what do you think the overall long-term reliability is going to be on that truck versus the others?
Well, it's early days, of course, but we are – I mean, this is the point of the long-term test. We bought one. We also own an F-150. We're looking at getting a Silverado. What strikes us about the Ram is just the attention to detail. It's almost like for what you said, you know, they've had a tough few years, and they've almost said, right, we need to – do you Americans use throw the kitchen sink at this thing? So you throw everything you've got at this truck. And when you get into it, the attention to detail is fantastic. You know, just the little things that they thought of that the other guys haven't. And that really shines through. I mean, the big loser in this actually was the Silverado. The F-150 is a few years old. So I think, you know, that came second, and Ford are probably, fairly au fait with that because it's an older vehicle. The Silverado, brand new. We actually went on the launch of it in Wyoming, drove it back from Wyoming to LA so that we could do the test and use our test facilities and everything else, our test track. And the Silverado comes third. And when you sit in it, it just feels like an old truck compared to the other two, which for something that's brand new is extraordinary. It feels like they just dropped the ball a little bit.
Interesting. Tell me why you think the Ram has upped its game. Do you know what the power plant is or why it's better? What was the one or two things that you thought really stood out? I mean, they're all sort of priced around the same, right? So it's not price.
I mean, it's huge.
And they all kind of have similar towing capabilities, similar power capability. So what is the big selling point now? Is it drivability? Is it fuel economy? Is it just
You're quite right. I mean, because you can spec, there are so many different iterations of these trucks now that you almost need a degree to pick the one that's right for you. And we spent a lot of time matching these vehicles up and making sure we had the right specification to compare. And we did a whole bunch of things. And we towed an Airstream, which is kind of fun in the film. We put an ATV in the back so that we could look at the space and the versatility. The big thing about the Ram, I think, is overall the way that it drives. The interior is terrific. The interior is so much better than the other two. And as I said, that attention to detail. Yeah, they all tow well. They've all got tons of space inside. I mean, they're big trucks now. They really are.
Yeah.
But overall, the Ram, pretty much across the board, Ford has the best engine, the EcoBoost. But in every other way, the Ram, maybe the Chevy has a slightly bigger load bay. But when you put, as an all-rounder, when you put it together, the Ram just has that extra level of polish. They've done a great job. They really have.
Now, the Silverado, at some point, I think it's sort of a later year edition, is going to have a carbon fiber bed. It's going to reduce weight. Do you think that's going to make any real difference?
I think that's on the GMC Sierra, because you know when you have
the GMC, sort of up in sort of the upscale version of the Silverado.
Which we've also just driven. And the Sierra is, as you say, a slightly kind of posher version of the Silverado. You get a bit of fake wood. You get a bit of... you get a slightly different dash and that sort of thing. And we'll probably bring one of those back to test it against the Ram. But it's, a carbon fiber, it feels like a gimmick to me. I mean, you're not going to save weight. I mean, think how much these things weigh. It's like when you stick carbon fiber on the dashboard of some sort of, giant BMW and say it saves like 2 ounces.
Yeah, no, then you put, make a difference.
Yeah, then you put Bill in the passenger seat and it ruins it all.
Oh, thanks.
You put your wallet in your pocket and you're done.
Yeah, like Bill's wallet, not mine.
Yeah. Speaking of Ram trucks, did you get your truck back, Bill?
No, not yet.
Who's got it?
No. Well, Mark Warman.
Warman?
Let's put him on notice right now.
I knew Warman had it. I was just trying to bust his balls.
Being sent there, So I'm trying to up the ante on getting her done.
Yeah. I just for fun, I ordered up, I forgot the schedule. I think it's next month or something. I'm going to drive a Ford Raptor, the new Raptor.
Nice.
But I think this new Ram truck, I'm trying to look at my schedule to see when that Raptor is supposed to come in. First week of October.
What I want to know is everybody's answer to the Raptor. I want to know what Chevy's answer, and I want to know what Dodge's answer. These trucks that I've been hearing about over the years, coming out and competing with them head to head. I want to see competition between those three.
And that's a good question. Now, Alistair, do you feel like a halo truck, like a Raptor for Ford, is a huge benefit for the company, or do you think it doesn't really make much of a difference?
Well, given that Ford's given up on building cars, so you're not going to have, apart from the Mustang, you're not going to have a Focus RS, Fiesta ST, which I was a huge fan of. So, that the trucks is where it's going to be at. You're going to have we're about to drive the Edge ST, a performance version of the Edge. But, if you think about where the Halo products are coming from in the future, then the Raptor's going to be it, plus the Mustangs.
Yeah. Now, what kind of impact do you think something like a Ranger will do? Is the Colorado doing well, for example?
Yeah, they don't sell it in the numbers that the big trucks do, but there's definitely a market for it. I mean, when you think how big the Silverado and those trucks are now, for a lot of people, they're just they're too big. It doesn't fit in my garage, so I have trouble taking it home. Whereas those more combat trucks are a little bit more accessible, a little bit cheaper, but also for somebody who doesn't need all the space, they can actually be a bit easier to live with.
If the big trucks are selling, 700,000 to 1 million units per year for the big three, that's almost 3 million combined units.
That's about 1 million combined, in a year.
Yeah. What do you think the midsize or the small truck market is? If you combine Tacoma and Frontier and Colorado, and even 20%?
I knew you were going to put me on the spot for this. I'm going to have to duck this question because I think particularly till Ranger really gets on stream, I think that can actually open up the market. I couldn't give you the exact figures off the top of my head. I'll have to look at the data. But I think Ranger will... I mean, that's existed in Europe, a version of that truck, for a long time, where it actually feels pretty big in Europe. I think that will do well for them. And I think they need it to complement the F-150. And it's the same we've seen with cars. As cars have got bigger and bigger and bigger, then you need to slot something in underneath. And it'll be a good product, and I think it'll do well.
Bill, you need to test a Ram, because I feel like if I test it in Venice, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, look, a Raptor, I could just run over curbs and people's lawns and stuff, and that's fine. But I don't know how to test, like, a Ram, like a real, like, truck. I feel like...
Oh, I do. I do. I got a horse trailer it can pull. I have a camper it can pull. I got four-wheelers I can throw in the back, and I can sure do anything else needed on the Goldberg estate.
Well, if you ever want to borrow ours, you're welcome anytime.
You're the man, Alistair.
But he bought his, so you got to be careful with it.
It's a kind of it's a kind of beige color as well. I'm not sure it's necessarily your look, but it's
Low-key is fine. I think low-key is fine. I it's really about, like, you know, in the day-to-day life, how comfortable is it? Because people are starting to invest. You know, you have over $60,000 into this truck. $60,000 into this truck. You get in it, you want it to feel like an Audi or something, right? Like,
and the reality is, it does. I mean, not quite to Audi quality, but you get in that thing and it feels like a luxury vehicle. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of money now, but this is something that you can live with day to day, and it can take you to the, you know, take you to the cinema on a Saturday night, and then do the work job during the week, and that's the appeal of them. When you get into the kind of upper ranges of the, you know, of the trims.
Is yours two-wheel drive or four-wheel drive? I ask that because we have a lot of parking garages and not everything fits.
Ours is all-wheel drive, yeah.
All-wheel drive. All right. I want to talk a little bit about some of the other cars you guys are testing. You brought a Corvette ZR1 out front, which is intense looking. Yeah. The wing in the back is huge. We'll have to get into that. But
I think it's taller
first,
than you.
I'm going to tell you guys about Continental. If you think about all the weird things that you find in cars, things like not just like French fries and melted crayons. I'm talking about things like live snakes, like if you live at Goldberg's place, and bizarre trinkets, the kind of stuff that makes you wonder about folks. Well, another thing that'll make you wonder, but in a good way, are Continental belts. I bet you didn't know they're OE in tens of millions of Chrysler, Dodge, Ford, and GM vehicles that roll off the assembly line. They're also OE on a majority of BMWs and VWs. Now, Continental is launching their aftermarket multi-V belt with the OE pedigree. It's their OE technology series. These belts are fanatically engineered for perfect fit, form, and function. And Continental has the OE technology series multi-V belt for 98% of the vehicles on the road in the U.S. and Canada. So listen, you get enough surprises working on your cars and trucks already. A belt shouldn't be one of them. Go with the Continental OE Technology Series Multi-V belt, the belt with the OE pedigree. To get the full story, visit OETechnologyseries.com. That's OETechnologyseries.com. All right, tell us about what you got going on with the Corvette outside, ZR1. This is the big dog in the Corvette lineup. I don't know if that wing is optional.
It is. That's part of a track pack. Yeah,
but I think it looks like something out of like Blade movie, maybe Predator. It's intense looking, and it's fastened to the back lip of the vehicle, not the trunk lid.
It's so actually built into the structure, which is interesting.
So you kind of like, I like that because it makes it seem like a real wing.
Yeah.
But a little hokey on getting stuff in and out of the trunk. But I guess if that's what you're.
You also feel a little bit self-conscious driving it with such a ridiculous rear wing.
With such a ridiculous rear wing, right? When you're sitting in traffic going, how's that working for you, buddy?
And the other problem, you get alongside. So you get this huge rear wing, which sits about 6 feet off the ground. And then to balance the aero at the front, you've got this little carbon fiber chin spoiler, which means that getting out of your garage or getting out of, you know, even going uphill sometime is a bit of a challenge. You're not scraping it. So it is. I mean, we've pitched it against the GT3, and as I sit here today on a Wednesday morning, we're actually halfway through the test. So we had it down at the Edmonds test track on Monday. We had the ZR1, the GT3, and actually our long-term Jaguar SVR as well. And then tomorrow we're heading out to Willow Springs to...
it down. What do you know for us so far? Where are we on price and horsepower and some performance? How do these things kind of match up?
So the interesting thing, some of our rivals might have put the ZR1 against the GT2 RS because they match up on horsepower. They both got over 700. But the GT2 RS is $300,000, which just makes the whole thing slightly ridiculous. So the ZR1 is base price is in our test at $131,000.
With some of the options and stuff.
Yeah,
they're coming at like $120,000.
Yeah, $120,000. Yeah. I mean, basically, in their base trim, there's about $25,000 between them. If you want on the on the 911, you probably want to put the carbon ceramic brakes on it, which are standard on the ZR1. So the difference comes out about just over 30,000. But of course, one of the things we're looking at is depreciation on a GT3 is a lot less than a Corvette traditionally. The Porsches hold their value and even appreciate. So you've got to think about not just the cost of what you're buying it for, but how much this thing's going to cost you over 3-5 years.
Yeah. All right, real quick, Goldberg. I understand you got to bail. You got to go to. You got to go back and film.
Yeah, unfortunately, gentlemen, it's been an honor and a privilege. But Alistair and Mr. Matt and Chris, I have to go to work.
Okay. Well, we'll check in with you again later, man. Thanks for calling in.
You got it, guys.
Thanks, see you later.
Okay. Anyway, continue.
So you want to know the numbers, don't you?
Yeah,
not how much it costs, really.
Well, okay, so $130,000 for the ZR1, like $160,000 for the GT2. Where did the SVR, the Jag, come in?
The Jag's about $140,000. But the main twin test we're doing is between the ZR1 and the GT3 because they are both philosophically the same.
Okay.
And what's interesting, you've basically got this old school test, haven't you? It's American bang for your buck, old school muscle against kind of European culture and sophistication. But what's in it? I mean, so the GT3 has 500 horsepower, so it's giving away 250 horsepower just over to the ZR1. But when we took it to our test track and put it off the line, ZR1 weighs nearly 3,700 pounds, whereas the GT3 is only 3,200.
Yeah, it's quite a difference.
So, but the big problem, both are rear-wheel drive, but of course where the Corvette engine is, trying to get them off the line, 0 to 60 for the ZR1, 3.6 seconds.
Okay.
GT3, what do you reckon, giving away 250 horsepower?
I think Porsche is pretty good at dialing it in. I want to say, what'd you say? ZR1 was 3.6? I'm going to say 3.6.
Well, actually, 3.3.
3.3. I was going to ask.
Then when you get to the quarter mile, they're actually identical, 11.2. The Vette with a pure horsepower advantage is doing 127 miles an hour, but the GT3 is only just behind at 124.7. So it's this whole thing about people get so excited by horsepower, and it's all a kind of, you know, the barroom bore chat. Mm-hmm. But in the real world, actually, it's about how it puts the power down. They're both running on Pilot Sport Cup 2 tires, so they've both got pretty much as racy as you can possibly get in a road tire.
Yeah.
So they're both on the same Michelins. The Corvettes are a little bit bigger, but yeah, in terms of straight line thrust, even with 250 horsepower more, the GT3 is actually outgunning it off the line. I think above 100, then the extra power of the ZR1 will make a difference.
And where did the Jag fit in there? Just curious.
So the Jag's interesting because the Jag is all-wheel drive, and we're actually running this car for a year. This weighs more, so it's nearly 4,000 pounds, so it weighs even more than the Corvette. But, of course, all-wheel drive, 0 to 60, 3.6, so the same as the Vette. Quarter mile, 11.6, so just behind the two of them. But what's nice about that? That's not on silly tires. That's just on P0, fairly standard, sporty, but not. The others look like hand cut slicks.
Yeah, but I still think that's impressive for what Jaguar's been trying to do with the brand. This, they haven't been building these SVRs and this super high performance line of cars for as long as the other guys have been.
You know,
the Corvette has always been a sports car, and they've really upped their game since the very beginning.
And philosophically, it's in a slightly different place. The GT3 and ZR1 are very much track focused. The Jag isn't so much. I can give you the skid pad figures as well because these are really interesting. So the ZR1 on really big boots, 1.24G. That's a huge figure. I think we're actually looking up as whether this is the highest load that we've ever tested, but it's got to be nearly right up there.
Okay, so that's the winner.
GT3 1.18, which is still really good.
I can't feel the difference, but sure.
and the SVR 1.07. But one of the things that the ZR1's got with the head up display system, it actually gives you what G you're pulling through the head up display system. Which, if you think about,
is it accurate?
I would have to cross-reference it. But the crazy thing about that, if you're on the circuit or something, you're just watching the G-meter all the time.
Yeah. You've got to be careful.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got to be careful with that. So you had a chance to spend some time in all of the cars. You're driving them around. What do you like? What's the car to drive? I assume you know, ZR1 probably has some sort of magnetic ride going on.
It does, yeah.
And Porsche doesn't, but it has their version of...
Yeah, it has the electronic damping. So they both, to be honest, for cars that are so track focused, they just both do a great job of being pretty easy to live with. The ZR1 has a kind of stealth mode, so you can knock the exhaust right down and it just cruises along quite happily.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I don't like about the driving position, if you're a tall guy, is terrible. The seats you constantly feel like you're falling out of. The GT3, I mean, we're all familiar with 911s. You get into it, it's got these kind of exuberant carbon bucket seats, which are another $5,000. But you just suddenly feel like you're in a race car and you're kind of instantly at home. The Yvette is a little bit intimidating because they've actually had to cut a big hole out the hood for the engine because the supercharger actually is too tall now for the traditional hood. So they've cut a hole in the hood, a bit like one of those kind of shaker hoods that you get on Chargers. So as you sit in the car, you're now got like a little peepee hole. It's almost like having a full-face helmet on. You're now staring out through a really narrow gap in the windscreen. So the whole thing is actually quite intimidating. You get into the 911, you're a bit more upright, you feel instantly at home. But
yeah,
it's a great test.
The Corvette thing is kind of interesting because I have some issues with that, you know, because I'm a short guy. And as a short guy, you get in the car and then it's very difficult to kind of see over the hood. And then when you start raising the seat up too much, Chris feels my pain. When you start raising the seat up too much, now you're starting to hyperextend your knee because the clutch is so far away if you're driving a manual, right?
Yeah.
And I guess maybe that's where all of these paddle shift cars will start to benefit short guys. Maybe that's the reason why they're doing it, because all these little Italian racers are going so fast and they need to do it that way. Which is funny because I don't know why we think of this in all the SUVs. I was driving the Lincoln Navigator. We drove that to Monterey and back. That's got adjustable pedals. That's the greatest feature in the world. I love the adjustable pedals. Why can't we put that in a Corvette ZR1? Because then I feel like I can get the right position going, because it's difficult to see. Like, I can't see the front, like, passenger corner.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of too far away and you got a big hood scoop in the way.
But this year, I mean, I actually have the opposite problem. I'm 6'4", and I feel like I'm sat too much on top of it. So I'd want to junk the seats, put some proper buckets in, and actually sit lower than what we call the H point, which is basically the hip point as you go a little, so to sit lower in the car. And it is amazing. I mean, this is a 200-mile-an-hour supercar, and I struggle to get comfortable in it. You have the same problem. And
yeah,
it's astonishing. They put all this engineering, all this time into carbon rear wings and everything else, and I get into so many modern cars and don't feel 100% comfortable.
It's weird. Don't be too short and don't be too tall. That's the lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or hire us as part of the team.
Yeah. You have to like Gattaca your feet. You have to like, is that the Ethan Hawke movie?
I don't know.
Gattaca would like chopped his legs to make him taller because he and like Jude Law needed to be the same height. Anyway, it's a weird reference. I'm sure only Matt Funnelier can get it. But how are the seats in the GT3? I ask that because it's sort of a fixed carbon fiber.
It is. You've got three options in the GT3. You've got the standard four-way, and then you can have an 18-way as an option, which is about $2,500, or you go all the way up to these buckets, which are about $5,000 and a carbon. They are surprising. The problem with these things, when you can't recline them in any way, that is kind of your driving position. And me, I would probably go with the standard seats. They give you good support. You've got a little bit more adjustability. And, you know, if you particularly passengers, I mean, it's all right getting into a car. And also, you look like a numpty getting in and out. If you try and get in and out, you have to kind of like slide your backside over
the
top of
it. Yeah, you have to kind of slip over and get it out of there. Yeah, that's kind of an interesting issue.
My girlfriend, we had the same seats in the 911T I tested recently. And my girlfriend hated it because just trying to get in and out, trying to get in and out of the thing.
Yeah, it's a pain in the butt. I can see that. Which is interesting because... Porsche is good with the options, you know. They just have a whole option list. I'm surprised if the GT3 even comes with seats. I think seats are optional, and you just got to pick. Do you want the $7,000 seats, the $5,000, or the $9,000?
And they're so good at like saying, "Oh, would you like a little bit of a red stitching on the steering wheel?" You think, "Oh, that'd be kind of nice." And that's another thousand gone.
That's another thousand gone. It could really add up. They've got a whole list of stuff. And then the Jaguar SVR. I love the Jaguar F-Type. I think it's a great car. I think it's one of the best sounding cars out there when you open that exhaust up. It would be fantastic if it was all-wheel drive, 570 horsepower, 575 with a manual, but that's not going to happen.
That's not
going to
happen.
But do you think that car is a more comfortable car compared to the others?
Honestly, it's not. We didn't put it in the test because it's less. The SVR is less track focused, and we wanted to kind of marry them up for cars with the same philosophy. But we took it along to test because we're interested in the performance.
But you can always pull the data that you guys exactly have and kind of compare it and say, what if we added the SVR to the?
And actually, yeah. I let you see, we're actually going up to Willow Springs tomorrow. We're taking the Jag as a camera car, so we can bolt some cameras to the exterior, which gives us the performance, so we can have a bit of fun with the Vette and the GT3.
Well,
and
the camera guy is going to be the most comfortable.
Oh, we're not. Yeah, yeah. We'll just hang him off the rear wing. It's all because,
Okay, so also you guys have another video that you posted. I just want to get into it. It looked like something kind of fun that you guys did. You took a 911T, an older one. You took an old 911. Yeah. Is that your 911?
No, mine's still in the UK. Sadly.
Yeah, trapped there.
Yeah, we're trapped there. Well, for now, we're working on it. That might be a story for another time.
So you took an old 911 and you did some laps in it. You took a new 911. You did some laps in it. And
yeah, we're always trying to do something a little bit different, and you know, there's so many car reviews out there. It's how can we do this differently? So we, and the 911T, of course, was inspired by the original from the early 1970s, and we found a place down in Newport Beach that had one. So they kindly let us borrow it, Car Park USA, great company, and we went down there, we borrowed it, and we kind of drove it around, then sort of presented, because that the classic car was $150,000. It was a really nice example of one. And then, of course, the modern one was about 110. So it was an interesting comparison. But in the end, slightly futile, in that the old one is not an everyday car. It's something that you have as a toy or an investment or just something that you love and cherish. Whereas the 911T, if you can't stretch to a GT3 or just don't want to live with something so extreme, that's such a great car.
It is.
Really is. I mean, we think about what is the best sport, all-round sports car you can buy today. And that would be my choice. And the irony is that they're replacing it.
The 911 or the 911T specifically?
911T specifically, because you basically take the best bits of a Carrera S, you take the basic shell of a Carrera. You kind of, it's almost like what the engineers, if you gave the development team, it's pretty much you give the development team say build the 911 for you, and that's what they've done. So for real enthusiasts, a stick shift 911T, unless you can reach to a GT3, is the way forward. Fabulous car.
Is the 911T based on the standard Carrera, or does it have the wider hips of the 4? Does it have the upgraded horsepower of the S? Like, how does the T line up?
So it basically takes a standard Carrera and then adds the best bits from the Carrera S. So you get the upgraded diff, you get the you've got part of the Sport Chrono pack inside, you've got the upgraded suspension. So it's basically, and in terms of power, I mean, again, this car's running, you know, mid 4s to 60 and stuff. I mean, you know, you're not going to say that it's underpowered. I mean, if you watch the film, which again is on our, can I plug this again? It's on our YouTube channel.
Yeah, of course.
And you'll see in there, when we actually run the figures, you know, it's so fast and so capable. What's nice about it, you know, to drive a GT3 hard, you know, you've got to have a lot of experience and ideally have done some racing in the past. Whereas the 911T, the limits are a little bit lower. You can start to feel it move around a little bit more. You're not playing around with downforce. So actually, it's a lot more accessible. And as an everyday road car, it's tremendous.
Well, we're going to have to give up the studio in a couple of minutes here. So before we do, I'm going to tell you about Dodge. Your authorized Dodge dealer invites you to experience a world of performance, design, and fuel efficiency. Schedule a test drive today. Go to Dodge.com or visit your Dodge dealer to learn more about the exciting offers on our powerful lineup. What can we look forward to next with you guys? We've got, I mean, it's not going to be long before we start getting into sort of an auto show season and a SEMA season. And SEMA isn't really your bag, but LA Auto Show is going to come up.
Well, I got Paris first in October, so I'm heading back to Europe for a week for the Paris show, and then off the back of it doing the 24 hours of Spa in a 75 horsepower Citroën, but I'll tell you about that another time.
Alpha Hour Tide's got more than that.
So I'm doing Paris Auto Show beginning of October. Then, of course, we get into LA Show. Then January is Detroit, the last Detroit show that will be in January before it moves to June. Auto shows aren't what they were, and we talked about this last time, but you know, they're still important for us, and we'll still have a big presence there. And yeah, there's lots of stuff coming out. It's a really driving the Nissan Altima in a couple of weeks, which will be another huge seller for them. Lexus UX that's on our side at the moment. We've just driven that.
And Lexus ES. I'm going to be driving one of those at some point soon. That's a big, that's a big important car for them.
It is an
the
important
mid-size sedan for them. That's their 5 Series, their E-Class. That's, you know, that's the big competitor.
It's big volume. It's big volume for them.
Yeah.
Then on the horizon, Mercedes have just launched the new GLE. There's a new BMW 3 Series that will debut at Paris. So there's a lot of stuff
coming
up. What
about Mercedes' electric lineup?
They've just unveiled the EQC. Again, you can check this out on our site. So this is basically a GLC but electric. Now, the interesting thing about this car, it's got about 400 horsepower and looks, I think it looks like a slightly uglier version of a GLC, but that's just my opinion. But the interesting thing, they're launching it with 200-mile range, which in today's world isn't that much. We've got a Chevy Bolt in our fleet, which has a range of about 270 miles. So
yeah, I think the I-Pace is going to have about 240.
Yeah, the I-Pace will have more than that. So they're almost making a bet that people, because batteries are still pretty expensive, so they're making a bet that we'll bring it in a price that people can afford and people are happy with a 200-mile range. The reality is, I think that's probably true, but psychologically, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
I think it's a tough sell. I think if you're looking at, I don't know, just for the sake of argument, if you say, hey, this Mercedes electric little SUV is $44,900 and the Jaguar is $49,900, but it has 250-mile range versus 200-mile range, I think people are going to buy the 250-mile range. I think it's so close in price. Like, if you're going to tell me it's $10,000 difference, $39,000 versus $49,000, then I think there's an argument to be made. But I think if it's a few thousand bucks.
It'll be interesting to see where the lease prices are as well. A lot of these vehicles will be leased. But the electric charge is coming. I mean, we are on, if you pardon the pun, we're in San Francisco next week where Audi's rolling out the e-tron, which is also an SUV. Mm-hmm. BMW will have electric version of the X3 on the way. You know, this is happening, and it's happening now. And over the next sort of year, 18 months, we're going to see more and more electric cars roll out.
Yeah.
Interesting times.
Alistair, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming in. Enjoy your trip to Paris. You got a tough job.
It's a tough job.
You get paid to go. That's your thing. Try not to get any tickets. Trying to, because I know what happened. You were in London last time. You got.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. My French isn't good enough to talk my way out of it either.
No. Thanks for that. Thanks for Bill for calling in. We'll try to get some more time with him next time. Like I said, he's got to film some stuff. Hey, what do you got to do? You got to pay the bills. All right. So for Alistair and Chris and Goldberg and myself, thanks, guys. And until next time. Wait a minute. Hold on one second. I guess before we wrap it up, I'm going to tell you one more time about Zybar. This is a revolutionary new product that our CarCast team is excited about. You've heard us talk about it before. This is an ultra-thin coating for manifolds, headers, turbos, tailpipes, mufflers, and tips. It's only 1/1000th of an inch thickness. It reduces radiant heat by up to 90%. It's the first DIY thermal coating of its kind. I took a look at this stuff. We've got some back there. I'm excited to apply it and see. This is not an expensive ceramic coating. This is pretty much makes that obsolete. This, you spray it on, and it's more of a, I don't know, maybe a polymer-based type of coating. It doesn't break down even in 2,000-degree environments, and it comes in 4 great colors. They have bronze, midnight black, cast silver, and Porsche gray. It'll make your engine a showpiece. It's available for purchase at zycoat.com, that's ZYCOAT.com, and many auto parts retail locations. Put Zybar on, take heat off. All right, so we're just about, we're good. We'll see you guys on Friday with myself and Adam Carolla. So until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's.
Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches. Now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles. Just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.